Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We are all entitled to sexual health, just as much as physical and mental health.
We want to make it easier for folks to find resources. However they engage with us, there's no wrong door.
So it's important that people are able to get access to care that is affirming.
Talking about what their sex life is, about their concerns, and to make sure they're healthy.
Do it for them. Do it for you, Montgomery County.
Your sexual health matters. Visit doitforyoumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hey, what's going on, Rush Nation? It is time for another special guest episode. And just so I'm not left on my own, I've brought a very special guest with me. Now, the man who I'm about to introduce is a fantasy football writer for Fantasy Chance, FightingChanceFantasy.com. But more importantly, he's the winner of the Scottfish Bowl 9. It's Gary Haddow. How are you doing, Gary? Welcome to 5 Yard Rush.
I'm doing great. I'm sitting in a hotel room on location for work right now. And so this is kind of the perfect thing to be doing, crush some time and talk some shop with you across the pond.
Amazing. Well, whereabouts are you in the U.S. right now?
I'm in the fabulous tropical location of Lubbock, Texas, which is in the panhandle, kind of if you've ever seen Friday Night Lights. About an hour and a half north of Midland, Odessa, where Friday Night Lights is set.
That's so cool. That's amazing. I've been to Texas, but I've never been quite there. So that's fascinating. And is that where you normally reside? Are you normally based Texas way, or are you just there just purely for work?
So I'm normally in Austin, Texas, which is further south. I'm up here just doing some work stuff, training a new employee. I will say the one thing about Lubbock is Texas Tech is here, and Texas Tech was home to the now infamous Patrick Mahomes, who should hopefully lose the Super Bowl in 2 weeks.
Is that because you are a 49ers fan, I take it?
It may or may not be, yes.
Now, you're having all kinds of a year, aren't you? So, first of all, you win the Scottfish Bowl 9, which we'll get to shortly, but then now your team makes the Super Bowl. I think you should go out there, buy a lottery ticket, and hit the jackpot, no doubt, or play some casino games.
Yes, definitely.
So Gary, what I always like to ask people when they come on is sort of how they got into football itself, and then talking about fantasy football and writing about it for a hobby or living and what you do. So how did you get into it?
So I've been doing fantasy for pretty much 10 plus years, and you know, playing in all sorts of leagues, mostly redrafting keeper, not really any dynasty until this year. And then randomly last year, I started talking to Ryan Hallam at Fighting Chance, and well, his handle is at Fighting Chance, and obviously he is the brains behind Fighting Chance Fantasy, and we became, you know, online friends and whatnot, and actually became pretty good friends, and then randomly asked Sam about writing for him, and from there, as I kind of started writing a little bit for Fighting Chance, fortuitously, Scott asked Ryan if everybody at Fighting Chance, there's six of us, if they wanted to be in Scott Fish. And so this is my first year doing that. First year writing for Twitter, first year really being on Twitter other than just kind of lurking. Yeah, it's all worked out pretty darn well.
Might be the best first year of anybody in the history of entering the space. So yeah, I guess it's only downhill from here, I'm sorry to tell you. Well, not unless you win the FFCC, and that's different.
I have told so many people, if I played in the Scott Fish tournament 100 more times, I don't even know if I would ever make the finals. Like, maybe once make the finals. It's a 1,200-person thing. And we'll get into the specifics, but when you're going against 1,200 people, the likelihood of advancing to the final 20 is, I don't know, 1% or whatever it is, 2%. So
yeah, it is. It's like 1.5%. So we were actually against one of your Fighting Chance colleagues in Dwayne McFarlane. He was in our group or in our division. We knocked him out. He actually beat us in a head-to-head.
Yeah.
He's no longer an unknown writer. He's now someone who is very well known, writing for just about everyone these days. But yeah, he was in our division. We actually finished our division 6-6, but we top scored in our division by like 100 points. So we ended up getting the bye despite having a 6-6 record.
That's same thing with me. I ended up going 7-4, which my roster will explain that later, but went 7-4, but had high points by quite a large margin, I believe. Definitely helped that I had a 400-point week. That made probably the entire difference. And it was crazy. Like, even the final week, there were like three teams vying. I think the way that it played out in week, whatever, 12, there was one team actually that I think may have gotten close to my points, if I remember correctly. So I wasn't even certain that I was going to advance. So I kind of got pretty confused on that. Luckily I did. And obviously here we are. So skin of my teeth, just making it all happen.
It's amazing. What a draw. So yeah, we'll get into Scott Fish Bowl in a bit and into the specifics about who you drafted and everything. But you've been doing this for a year, I guess you're one of the better placed people to ask this next question, which is what advice would you give to people who want to talk about their passion, whether that's fantasy football, soccer, model train sets, skiing, whatever, for a living? Because again, you've only been doing this for the last sort of 12, 15 months or so.
Honestly, the biggest advice is if you're interested in writing, you're interested in talking, whatever it is, you just need to start doing it. Even after Ryan had said, yeah, like, why don't you join Fighting Chance? It took me, I think, 6 months. That was around the Super Bowl when I asked, and I put out my first article in May. It's not as if these articles have to be deep dives that you've spent 6 months researching. It literally was just me pushing it off and pushing it off because I was just nervous that I was going to fall flat on my face. Which, to be honest, maybe I did, maybe I didn't, who knows. Ultimately, you just got to do it. And the more you write, the more you want to do research to write, because as you're writing, you realize you need to go and look at, you know, Pro Football Reference, what I use a lot just for basic stats and stuff, or then you want to get into more stat analytics to be able to back up the arguments that you're trying to make. And as you do that, just your entire perception of the game, I think, actually gets a little bit enhanced because you're trying to elevate the way that you're looking at players so you can talk about the players so you can sound smart and have people listen or read. And same thing, I mean, if you're doing a podcast, just these guys the other week, they were Fantasy In Session. I was on their pod and they were like, well, we do this pod, but we really want to start writing. And I was like, you guys are writing. You just need to transcribe your pod and then tweak that into, you know, what you is sussing out your arguments and whatnot and your examples. I think the more you do it, the more easy it will become, and you'll just kind of take off. The only difficulty is that we just live in this era of, it's just such a saturated space. Dwayne, you referenced Dwayne McFarland, he's one of the few people that I've seen that's really kind of elevated and started to get to a point where he is, you know, making a tiny bit of money from it, I believe, jumping from a couple different places. And I know he writes for Football Guys. Everybody else is just kind of doing their thing, and it's more about the passion and the hobby. And trying to just, you know, make yourself better at what we love to do, since, you know, we're all kind of, for lack of a better term, addicted to this thing that is fantasy football.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really key point, is that, you know, we got into this top tonight a couple of years ago, and, you know, we knew we weren't going to make serious money out of it. We still don't make, you know, get a couple of bucks here and there, but nothing substantial, and it all goes back into the pod anyway. So it's not like we actually take anything home. But ultimately, we know that what we're doing is we're just building a community. And for us, it's about getting to know people who have similar interests as us, and getting to speak to interesting people and learn and develop. And we could be doing this 20 years from now, and I probably still might not make a dime. And I'm okay with that, because my day job pays pretty well, and I can live. I mean, it'd be nice, don't get me wrong, but if it doesn't happen, I'm not totally bummed out, because the people you get to meet on Fantasy Twitter and talk to on podcasts, and, you know, I think it's more than enough payment for passion. And I think if you want to do this for a living, then you got to be prepared to go out with that sort of mindset, that you're doing it for love first, and not money, otherwise you're just set to fail, unless you've got a revolutionary idea of doing things different to everybody else.
Exactly. Completely agree. And it's very difficult to come up with those revolutionary ideas. But if you have one, then start sussing it out, start getting the data to back it up, start getting the words to get it out there. I think the easiest thing to do is, once you have articles posted somewhere, you post them to Twitter, or if it's about a player, it's about a topic, join into Twitter threads about player discussions. And then when you're dropping kind of your knowledge, you can be like, oh yeah, I just wrote about this. Put it in there, and hopefully, you know, just snowball. You get a couple people looking, a couple more people, a couple hundred people, and all of a sudden you're kind of off to the races and see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to have peaks and troughs, and you'll have a day or one article or one podcast you do that will get a massive spike, and then the next one or one down the line won't get as much traffic. And you have to realize what was good and what wasn't. What did people like? What didn't they like? What was the difference? And learn from that. And it's always peaks and troughs. It's not always rising up arrows, but that's why we do it. Love the grind. So let's talk a little bit about your fantasy season. We're going to take the SFP9 out of it again for a moment, because we know how great that was. You mentioned it's your first year doing Dynasty. So how did your season go? How many sort of leagues did you play in? And did you get any titles?
Yeah, so in total, just for Dynasty, I have three kind of online Twitter leagues. I did absolutely garbage in them. One of them I kind of punted. I have like 9 picks in the first 2 rounds, so that's exciting for next year. One of them, I just had a, I don't know, mediocre team, had some injuries. And then the other one, the Dynasty startup, it's a super flex, and I managed to take Baker in the second round and OJ Howard in the fourth round. That was kind of the third Dynasty I did, so I wanted to do some variation and just see how it went. So that was great, because that sucked. I mean, Baker should be good moving forward, but OJ Howard, who the heck knows? So that team was just terrible. So I think I got a few first overall picks there. I took over an orphan league, which I'm very excited about. I have the first overall pick, so obviously orphan teams tend to not be that great. And it's actually my best friend's league. He's been playing in it for 10 years, and they've never actually had someone join. So I'm excited. Kind of got to take that over almost like in the second or third week of the season and start making moves right away. So that one should be pretty fun. But like I said, so Dynasty isn't my main thing. It's definitely more redraft, and actually more so keeper. I'm in 2 big money keeper leagues, 2 keepers and 5 keepers respectively. And then I also this year finally started doing some redraft leagues, and I actually did well, really well in redraft this year. In my keeper, one of my keeper leagues, I set a record for most wins. So that was awesome. And in my other one, I literally missed playoffs because of there's a 4-way tie for 6th place. And I missed playoffs by, I think, 100 points. But had I made playoffs, I was the high scorer for all the playoff weeks. So that's demolishing, because that's definitely my main league. It's my college league that's been going on. It's an 11-year kind of mini dynasty, 5 keepers. So that one kind of got a little gutted from that. But moving on, moving up type thing. So we'll see what happens next year.
Wow. That really stinks. I had a league like that where... similar thing. I lost out on the head-to-head tiebreaker, and then would have won the playoffs. Instead, won the consolation bracket, which is not winning.
definitely not.
It's just working out my average of it. Just boosted my average up. I tried to avoid. So I played in 40 leagues this year across Dynasty and Redraft, and I only made the toilet bowl in one, and that was a Dynasty startup similar to you. Tanked, offloaded everything, picked up 5 first round draft picks this year. So I've got almost half the first round. So feeling pretty good coming into it for this season, but. Yeah, similar thing to you, OJ Howard. Took Jameis, but it's a super flex. And we had Cam, and Cam went down. And then we had Big Ben was our third option. He went down. So we had to play the rest of the year with Carl Allen for a bit. And then we had just basically whatever QB was going to start that week. I mean, not luckily, but there was an injury most weeks. So you could pick up a Jeff Driscoll for a week, or you could pick, and that's what we resort to doing, which was frustrating, but it was exciting. But what were your big insights for the teams that one did well, and then the ones that didn't, that you could take away and sort of process learn for 2020?
So Aaron Jones was kind of my guy going into the season. I've been beating his drum since early in the off season, and luckily that kind of panned out. Funnily enough, almost any league that I had Aaron Jones, I made playoffs or won, with the exception of that one, you know, mini dynasty league. So just in terms of a player, that was awesome. So I'm a very heavy running back drafter. I tend to go running back, running back, running back to open almost any draft, regardless of scoring. This season, obviously, that worked out a little bit better, just given that wide receivers had such a huge dip in the 2019 season compared to other years. So that worked out. Also, I will pretty much always wait on quarterback and wait on tight end. And I was lucky enough to get Mark Andrews or Darren Waller in almost any league that I waited, and then was able to get Lamar super late or, you know, Jameis, like you said. And even I have a couple really deep super flex leagues, one of them being Scott Fish, which we'll talk about later. But I have another one kind of similar in structure. And I was able to get Ryan Tannehill like almost at the very end of my draft, just thinking that Mariota probably wouldn't hold up. And, you know, Tannehill, while I didn't expect him to do what he did, he at least seemed like he still had something. You know, he did okay. And as we've all seen, Adam Gase is a dumpster fire. So maybe there was room to grow for that. And so kind of just lucked out there. And lastly, I've been beating the drum for Ryan Fitzpatrick since like week 7. I think I was when I first wrote an article being like, I'm in love with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Here's why, even if you're going to laugh at me. And dude, I mean, he crushed it. So I had him almost everywhere. I even made a trade to make it look like I was trading for Tyreek Hill, but I threw in, I got Ryan Fitzpatrick attached to Tyreek Hill in one league. And sure enough, like the guy didn't even have any idea that that's what I was doing. And I traded like Phillip Rivers, Tevin Coleman after his 4 touchdown game, and Mark Andrews to a team that just needed something. And I got Fitzpatrick and Tyreek Hill from him. And it was like, this is awesome. It totally just worked out in my favor. So
you and I sound incredibly similar, because my strategies are very similar. I don't believe in drafting tight end, or if I do, pick one up 9th round or later. So I got Austin Hooper, Darren Waller, or Mark Andrews, like you said. I've always been a big Fitz guy. So I decided this year to do a stream of each position and just do it a week-to-week basis and see where I could end up. And I ended up with the QB2 overall behind Lamar just by streaming. And the rules were the QB had to be under 30% owned each week. And it was that was my rule. So I started off kind of hit and miss. And then round about when Tannehill came in, the last like 7 weeks, I think 6 of those weeks was either Ryan Tannehill or Ryan Fitzpatrick, until Ryan Tannehill's ownership went up, and Fitzpatrick's ownership was still at the end of the season under 30% on ESPN. So I played him week 17, for example, against the Patriots. And then it boosted me from QB3 to QB2. And if you look at the names of what I streamed, it was mostly Tannehill, Fitzpatrick. I used Fitzpatrick a bit early on in the season. But, you know, Sam Darnold, when he had that good stretch of games, you know, we're not talking elite quarterbacks here, which is the whole point of the exercise was to work out opportunity cost per position. And it just proved to me all along that there's no point drafting quarterbacks, because if I can outstream every quarterback but the number one, then why would you? It's got to the point where I don't even think I need to draft one unless I fall in love with a guy like Jameis or Lamar, for example. But yeah, it's interesting.
And I totally agree with that. I think that a lot of people don't necessarily think about what's the net difference? It's kind of like VBD kind of thing, value-based drafting, but like QB1 to QB10, QB10 then to QB20, or maybe in smaller increments of QB10 to QB15, QB15 to QB20, that the net difference on a points per game basis really ends up almost from QB10 to 20 is maybe like 3 or 4 points a game maximum. Mm. And if you can just figure out the right matchups, I believe this even stronger for tight end. And I know I don't actually think that the numbers back me up, but for me, it's after you get past the first one or two tiers, almost everybody is, you're just hoping for either a touchdown or maybe, you know, 60 yards maximum. Once you find a guy, you just latch on to him. But ultimately, we don't really know. And so my biggest thing, you know, everybody talks about there's three phases of fantasy. Well, I guess four. There's drafting, there's waivers, there's trades, and then there's roster management. So who are you actually starting and that type of stuff? Assume that who you're starting is pretty difficult to get right or wrong, and you just got to be good at that. Trades, I'm actually not very good at trading. I kind of tried to find ways to package guys to get one big fish and either hurt my bench, but that's because I believe so strongly in my ability to work the waiver wire. Unfortunately, not everybody has the same amount of time to sit and obsess over this stuff. And as soon as a sleeper alert comes through, they're popping open every one of their leagues to see if that guy's available to pick up. And if they are, they're just like, I turn my roster, I like to call it, I turn it like butter. It's just the bottom of my roster. From the moment I draft, even before the season starts, I'll potentially have done 10 or 15 adds and drops, just trying to find the right combination of what I think makes sense. And then obviously season one or week one hits, and then it's all gone to shit. And we're just still trying to figure out back to square one. But for me, waivers is really where I build up a lot of stuff. You think about the Ryan Fitzpatrick's, Devonta Parker. Like, if you manage to get him, like in all the leagues that I got him, I won, which is pretty straightforward, right? If you think AJ Brown in a lot of leagues was on waivers, Darius Slayton had some really good games. Terry McLaurin, you know, I mean, those guys are rookies, but there were people that were on the waivers that just ended up being huge. Devin Singletary could have been dropped in a bunch of leagues after he hit his injury bug in the first half of the season. I remember in my main league, Carlos Hyde, it was like a race to who could get to Carlos Hyde first to pick him up. And there was like that 15 seconds, if not 15 minutes, of the news breaking that he was going to the Texans, of everybody rushing to get him. I picked him up and I dropped Darren Waller. I automatically regretted it, and I was trying to figure out how to get Darren Waller. Luckily, I was able to get both, but that's the type of thing where it's just like a random guy that you don't think is going to do much, and then all of a sudden he has his first 1,000-yard season.
Absolutely, and especially a tight end. Every season it seems to be that you get these guys at tight end that it just, you can pick these guys up halfway through the season. Jared Cook was on waiver wise in a lot of leagues. I picked him up everywhere. Turned out to be almost a league winner for me down the stretch. Tyler Higbee, the same. These guys were easily, readily available that you could just pick up for next to nothing. Anthony Miller, who had a couple of good weeks there, very, very similar. You know, there are guys that are always on the waiver wire that you can pick up that will just do a job for a few weeks. And I think too many people get baked into the building for the long term, when actually it's, you just got to win week to week, and you just got to think about your week to week construction. Obviously, you need to have a main core of guys to get you through the weeks, but you know, your plan B doesn't have to be sitting on your bench already. You can pick one up. It's absolutely fine. And the key is just not to panic. And if you can not panic and just get through, you'll be fine. It sounds like you and me are very similar in our schools of thought, which I love. And I love the running back first approach, because I keep banging the drum that it's the most volatile position. It's the one that goes down. You need to have more depth there, because that depth doesn't exist on waiver wise. You know, I mentioned the streaming exercise I did. I only streamed the running back 31 in PPR.
Wow.
because the availability of choices there. And don't get me wrong, in a couple of situations, I made the wrong move and here and there, and I could have probably boosted that optimally to like maybe the RB26, but not a huge jump. You know, the only guys that really came out late on that would have been helpful were people like Raheem Mostert. You know, there was a couple of guys down the stretch, but it wasn't a ton of players that you could get. So
we had a pretty healthy season for running backs compared to, you know, last year and stuff. So I totally agree. I'm really curious. Do you know what your wide receiver stream number would be?
My wide receiver number wasn't too far from my running back number. It was 30. It was good until the last few weeks of the season. So I was actually trending up quite nicely, but then the last week killed me. So week 16, I had Anthony Miller and he got injured in the first quarter. So that 1.2 that he got absolutely bombed me from 24 to 30 in that final week. But second half of the season, it was trending quite well. So I went with, for example, James Washington, Darius Slayton, as you mentioned, Zach Pascal when he was the only player there. I had Kenny Stills and Cole Beasley for a bit. But at the start of the season, you know, I had sort of week four, DJ Chark was under 30% owned. So I picked him up and he had a couple of nice weeks for me there before he dipped off. But I picked up well towards the end of the season when guys were getting injured and it was just left with James Washington and was on him for one of his big weeks. And then Miller week 16 bombed me from 24 to 30. But it's still, even then, if it had been optimal, I would have finished the wide receiver 24, which is, okay, fine. Got a low-end wide receiver 2, which you streamed, but there's still 23 other guys you've kind of lost to there. So, whereas you've got tight ends, I finished at the tight end 7. I was higher than that, but it was just towards the end that everybody got injured, that the availability of everyone went up. So I had to start like RSJ and Ryan Griffin towards the end because there was just no one else to kind of start down the stretch. But no, it's fascinating. So your approach is very similar to mine. You build with running backs because the scarcity's there. You pick up wide receivers in next tier and then you hold to tight end because there's always a guy. There's always a Darren Waller every year. Someone who jumps up and makes that near enough top tier to where you're not going to miss him. As long as you can identify who that person is early and can jump on them early, you'll always survive.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk about the Scottfish Bowl then. So as you mentioned, it was your first year and you won it. It was our first year. What was your draft strategy coming into it? Because it is very unique. It's tight end premium. It's super flex. It's very deep, 22 rounds, big rosters. What was your draft strategy coming in? How were you going to construct this roster and think about what you were going to get?
So I picked 3rd overall. And for anyone that's not in it, or if you are and this didn't happen to you, change what you're doing. It's the group, giant like Twitter, like private group of all the people picking 3rd. Yeah. And we would all just be doing our own mocks and stuff and talking about the different strategies. And I thought that was really helpful. Consensus was hopefully McCaffrey would fall to us after, you know, some combination of Zeke or Barkley went 1st and 2nd, or maybe Kamara or even Kelsey or something. So I got Christian McCaffrey. And once that happened, that's when everything else unfolded. And I'll come circle back to that. But for me, it was tight end premium to me didn't actually boost that many people. It really only boosted the top guys and, you know, probably the Kelsey, the Kittle, the Ertz. Beyond that, it was maybe Henry, maybe Ingram. And so for me, I honestly thought, well, those guys set records last year. They're probably not going to repeat, which they didn't. I'm going to punt on tight end. I didn't take my first tight end until round 13, and I took 13, 14, 15, 16. I took 4 tight ends back to back to back to back.
Oh, wow.
Only one of them. So I took Graham, Ian Thomas, Darren Waller, and Cameron Brate. I started Graham like once or twice, and then Darren Waller obviously was just my go-to. I was able to pick up a couple tight ends later, so that was fantastic, and I got them actually free. I didn't even have to spend on them. So that was one of my big things, and because I knew tight ends were just going to go fast and furious. I also wanted to wait on quarterback until a certain tier. And so with Scottfish having -4 for interceptions and -6 for pick sixes, I really thought either Allen or Winston were going to fall pretty far. But they seem to have pretty high upside in terms of rushing and total touchdowns, which obviously worked out pretty well. So I did five skill players, and then I got Allen and then Winston in the sixth and seventh. And then I luckily got Tannehill in the 19th. He was someone – oh, I also got – I think it's in this league. Yeah, I also got Case Keenum. I think I took Keenum with a late-round pick, and then – I also got Tannehill because I thought Keenum was on a roster with a rookie quarterback. Like, we don't know if he's going to be good. And Keenum had been serviceable before, you know. It's not as if he had been always bad. And really, you're just looking at someone to fill in case Jameis, you know, shits the bed and starts just playing terrible. Or he gets benched, like we saw what happened last year. And so those worked out. I will say that because I had Allen, Winston, Keenum, and Tannehill, Tannehill wasn't anything until halfway through the season. So I was flip-flopping between Keenum and Winston, and I literally got them wrong almost every week until finally I stuck with Winston and he really started to take off. And so because of that, I started the season actually pretty poorly. And that's why my record ended up being much worse, despite my team being pretty stacked by the end of it. So the third part was how to start my draft. I wanted five players in the first three picks. I couldn't figure out who I wanted, so I was just going to let the draft fall to me. And I wanted McCaffrey at three. I wanted Michael Thomas or Mike Evans. And I wanted Devonta Freeman or Aaron Jones. So any of those five guys in some way, you know, it ended up being my first pick was McCaffrey. My second pick was Michael Thomas. My third pick was Mike Evans. My fourth pick was Devonta Freeman. My fifth pick was Aaron Jones.
Oh, what a dream.
And then I got Allen, and then I got Winston. And then from there, I just had a bunch of guys that were kind of hit or miss. I got Tevin Coleman, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson. I played what? Alshon maybe a few weeks. I didn't even play DeSean the first week, I don't think. And Tevin Coleman, I kind of played, and he did okay with the exception of a couple blow-up games. He was never terrible, but never that fantastic. And the rest of my roster was just kind of, you know, whatever it was. But because I had this nucleus of two record setters of McCaffrey and Michael Thomas, that definitely helped. Those guys got 40 to 50 points more often than not. And then I had Aaron Jones, and the value on Aaron Jones was just fantastic. But that was at least my draft, was kind of the three things. So wait late on tight end, wait on QB, and you know, go specifically for those guys who I just lucked out being able to get. I don't think I could really repeat that per se. I could just kind of hope that things worked out in my favor.
No, absolutely. I think our approaches were somewhat similar. We changed slightly on quarterback, given the fact it was super flex, we held slightly more value. So we drafted at the 104 spot, and McCaffrey fell to us at the 104. So we obviously snapped him. And then we took Gurley at the 209 because mm-hmm. I just didn't believe. When the arthritis reports came out, I was like, if he's hurt, he's hurt, but he's playing. Played preseason. Like, he's not hurt. It just turned out that the Rams used him wrong. And, you know, they've even come out and admitted that. I wasn't as put off with the injury report, especially at the 209. But then I was really high on Rodgers coming in. I believed he could be the QB1 with that new offense. He'd be mm-hmm. unleashed. So we took him at the 304, which turned out to be a disaster pick. And then we went running back again. So we took four running backs in the first six rounds. We took McCaffrey, Gurley, Johnson, and Philip Lindsay in the sixth round. And then our fifth round pick was Lamar Jackson. We wanted to balance
between
pocket passer and a running quarterback. So we mm-hmm. wanted, because then that way you've got a guy with a pretty safe floor because he rushes versus what could be an elite player at sort of a traditional quarterback. And that was our strategy going in, which if yeah. Aaron Rodgers had been anywhere near where we projected him to be, would have been brilliant. But Lamar kind of got us through. So we didn't take our first wide receiver till round seven, and we got Cooper Kupp, which worked out well. And then we took Nick Foles, which didn't work out, as our third QB, and we didn't take any other QBs. So it meant we had to spend all our fab on Matt Barkley when he came in for Patrick Mahomes to cover the bye weeks. It worked out. I mean, it did what it needed to do. And then we had a run of wide receivers, and then we didn't go tight end till 12th round. We took Jack Doyle. But the real steal was we took Will Disley with a 19th round pick, which until he got injured, he was a tight end two, tight end three overall until he got injured. So it was working out really nicely. And then when he went injured, we started to really hit the fan. And then unfortunately for us, if we had made it through the first round of the playoffs, we had that sort of nucleus of team that could have been devastating, because we also drafted in the 16th round. We had Debo Samuel, who didn't start well, but he kicked on. Championship week, we had Deion Lewis on our bench. So he was someone that we could have brought in when Henry went down, and he wouldn't have had a bad week. Mm-hmm. We drafted DeMarcus Robinson with the 21st pick, 21st round. So, you know, we hit some guys late on in that draft that worked out, but unfortunately, we just had two really bad weeks. And unfortunately, one of them was in the playoffs. And we missed because we actually picked up Mostert as well. So we picked him up and unfortunately didn't start him. And had we started him over, I can't remember who we didn't start over him. It was kind of a game time decision and decided to bench Mostert. And we got knocked out by Darius Slayton's monster game on Monday Night Football. So the guy who was like 17th in that playoff week ended up jumping and booting us out of the bubble spot at 10. So we got eliminated in 11th on the bubble because Darius Slayton had like 50 points or something like that. And had he gone for a few less yards, then we would have made it. And I mean, I don't think we would have won, but I think we would have got close. But these things happen. That's why we love the Scott Fish Bowl. The great thing about the Scott Fish Bowl is the heavy hitters. So in terms of the guys who've been doing this for a long time, did you have any sort of big superstars or somewhat famous fantasy names in your division that you knocked out as a result?
Yeah, the biggest, and he and I were just battling nonstop, probably was Justin Boone. Oh my gosh, I am totally blanking. I'm trying to get into it right now. There we go. So Justin Boone's with the score.
Who won the Fantasy Pros Analyst Top Ranker Award this year.
Yeah, and so he and I were like battling. There was even a point where when Freeman went down, Devonta Freeman went down, I had $39 left in Fab. I put it all on Brian Hill. Justin Boone put down 40, and I messaged him being like, did you do this just because of mine? And he was like, yes, that's exactly why I put down 40. And I was like, this is Scott Fishbowl. Justin Boone just had to outbid me. Like, this is awesome. And yeah, so he took first overall in the division, and it was literally like even after the bye, both weeks, then he and I were just battling the entire time until I ultimately, you know, I advanced to the final. But it was, he was the person even in the semis that I was going against, making sure that I, like, you know, outpaced him. So then Mark Schofield, he's with Inside the Pylon. If you haven't read his stuff, his QB stuff is so awesome. He's really, really talented at his QB analysis. Who else? We got someone from RotoViz, a few fans, Dynasty Trade Calculator, Fake Pigskin. He's from Ireland, so another one across the pond. Dynasty Fantasy Football, Factory, and then Athlon Sports. But the two biggest guys are Justin Boone and Mark Schofield. But it was I didn't have any of the names that I know some of the other people have that are listed. More established fantasy football names. Obviously, Justin had an amazing season, but I don't think he's as much of a household name as, say, like a Mike Wright or like Matthew Berry or something like that. So
yeah, no, I get that. But the great thing is Scott does a leaderboard, so you must have been ahead of the Matthew Berrys and the Mike Wrights and this lot for pretty much most of the season based on how your points were going.
Yeah, so I had a 398-point week. That definitely helped, I think. It might have been the highest of the season, or pretty close to it. So I was talking to Scott about it, but we weren't sure. So that was pretty cool. definitely makes a big boost when you're looking at that leaderboard. And honestly, I mean, the best thing to me is, like, I still talk to a bunch of these people. Obviously, I talk to them, you know, on Twitter threads and whatnot, but also just, like, in DMs and whatnot. I'm not as if I'm, like, best friends with them. I know. Some of the divisions maybe have gotten a little bit closer and stuff, but just the availability to have these people to bounce off ideas. Dan Cook, who's with Dynasty Trade, or Dynasty Fantasy factory. He does really big IDP work. And so I have a couple leagues that have IDP heavy stuff. So I reach out to him regularly anytime that I have IDP questions. And it's just like, those are the type of nuances that prior to that, you know, I didn't really have go-to people that I could ask questions for, kind of, you know, become friends with. So it's definitely a great thing that Scott does in organizing this and really bringing the giant FF community together in various ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've met some great people in it, Dwayne being probably the closest we grew to anybody in our division. And he's someone I message quite a lot on Twitter. He's been on the show a couple of times, but he just... because a couple of times I love his utilization report, and there's a couple of times of like flip-flopping a decision. I'm like, can you share this bit of your utilization report with me? He's like, yeah, of course. And he'll answer some questions. He's great like that. And yeah, through him and then other people. And it's just such a great tournament. We've wanted to be in it the last couple of years. This year we finally got there, and it's just amazing to be part of. So amazing he does. I'm glad Scott's recently been rewarded by the FSGA for Humanitarian of the Year, or I don't know what the official award is, but due to how much money the Scottish Bowl raises, which is around about $40,000 a year or something like that, it's amazing what he does. And the pictures of him shopping for Toys for Tots, etc. So it's just incredible. So let's talk about the playoffs. You get through, I assume you got the bye through points, or did you have to play in week 13?
No, I got bye through points, luckily.
Yeah. So you get to week 14, so you're down to the last 400, I think, at this stage. Or is it 200? Last 200, I think it is.
I always get thrown off by it. I think it's the last 240, because that's the top.
It's the top.
The top two advance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last... 20%, not 2%, last 20%. So,
yeah.
So 240 remaining. At that point, did you feel confident that you were going to win? Did you think like, I've got a chance here? What were you sort of thinking when you're entering the playoffs of week 14?
Oh, man, honestly, I don't know if anybody can be confident going into this stuff. It's so difficult just because you know how many people you're playing against, and it just seems kind of crazy that you're even there. And so, I don't know, at week 14, I was like, I think you have to finish top 2 out of 20. And I was like, I guess there's a chance. And then I just had a couple guys that kind of put up big numbers. I know that I ended up outscoring, I think Justin Boone was the next closest, and I outscored him by about 40 points. I had really good weeks from Tannehill and Winston, so that made a big difference. I think Aaron Jones had a huge week. It's tough, though. I mean, like, I had Alshon go down and get zero in that week. And that definitely, like, anytime that happens, you're like, well, what the heck was I thinking? Like, you know, you're always second-guessing everything. I had Darius Slayton. That's his Monday night football game. I had him on my bench and was like, this is nuts. I'm going to lose. This is terrible. When actually, you know, I ended up winning by 40 points. And so at least that worked out. I will say week 15 was way more intense, because week 15, so you have to be top 2 in week 14. But in week 15, you're playing a championship. You know, it's you versus 12 people. And so it's like, oh my gosh, to even get to the finals, I have to win a championship and then win a championship, right? And I was like, I don't know if this is going to happen. This just doesn't seem like it's possible. And, you know, tracking the scoring is a little bit difficult, mostly because, you know, it has to get updated on the site. There's not an easy way to kind of be tracking everybody. But luckily, I had Jameis Winston go off. Luckily, because, you know, the way that it works is it's you're really the top person from most divisions. And so if for fab purposes and picking up players, there's not a lot of people also picking up players. So I picked up Breshad Perriman and started Breshad Perriman. So between Breshad and Jameis, they both got 44 points. That helped a good amount. You know, I ended up with 294 points. That felt pretty good. It was really good Michael Thomas week, and also Darren Waller. Plus Ryan Tannehill at this point was just playing pretty well. So luckily, that all worked out. And, you know, if you look at the live scoring on the MFL site for Scott Fish, you can actually see your potential points. And I optimized my lineup. I think I missed 3 points. So definitely worked out that, you know, played the right guys and everything. And if I may continue on, you know, we finally get to the final week. And going into all this, my wife is really big on like abundance mindset, as she calls it, and being like, when I win, because I will win type stuff. And I just kept being like, you don't understand like how difficult this would be to win. The final is the top 20 teams. Not only did I just beat 11 other teams, now I have to beat 19. Like, I have a 5% chance of this actually happening. It's not going to happen. And so as the week is going, Jameis puts up, what, 4 interceptions, a pick 6. He gets 8 points. Darius Slayton got me 0 points. And I was like, there's no chance. Like, this isn't going to happen. And I'm talking to Tommy Garrett, a guy who, you know, we've become good friends kind of prior to Scott Fish. We became friends on Twitter just doing mocks in the offseason. And he and I are DMing, and he actually put together a spreadsheet of all the different players, all the different teams, so that we could track points. And he's like, you know, everybody has had someone that's completely busted. Almost everybody has had a quarterback that's busted. So I was like, there's still not a chance. I'm probably not going to win. Well, I had Ryan Tannehill put up 30, so that was okay, but he definitely missed out on like an extra touchdown. And so I was like, that's probably not going to happen. Luckily, I had Devonta Freeman put up 42 points. I had McCaffrey put up 45 points. Perriman put up 25, and Michael Thomas put up 40. But I still have this 0 and this 8. And so going into Monday Night Football, Packers versus Vikings, I know I have Aaron Jones, and I was very defeated. I was like, I'm down 40 points from just like, I have to make up 40 points. Then I'll be close enough and we'll see what happens. Everybody had maybe one or two players. They pretty much either had Mike Boone or Devonta Adams. One guy had Amir Abdullah, or combinations of that. But ultimately I needed at least 40 points from Aaron Jones to even be competitive. So I don't know if you remember that game, but in the first quarter, Aaron Jones, I think, had like 20 yards. And then in the second quarter, he had, I don't know, like 40 yards. So I had actually turned the game off halfway through the second quarter. It was just like, there's no chance this is going to happen. So I'm just going to see what I can do and we'll go from there. And I just turned it off. It's not going to happen. I'm talking to my buddy and it's the second half of the game. And he's like, how are you doing? I was like, yeah, it's not a big deal. Aaron Jones isn't doing much. And I like pull up the score and I was like, huh, Aaron Jones has 24 points. How does he have 24 points? That's crazy. Like, forgot about the 50 plus yardage bonus. And then he has some catches and just here and there. And I was like, I'm only back 16 points. And there's like a quarter and a half. This is nuts. Like, this could happen. We'll see. Sure enough, like so the story is that my buddy yells for his wife. And his wife comes in, and his wife is like this crazy good luck charm at fantasy. And he just goes, Natasha, Aaron Jones touchdown, Aaron Jones touchdown, Aaron Jones touchdown. She's like, I don't know who that is, but okay. The next play, Aaron Jones breaks a 56-yard touchdown. And I'm like losing my mind because at this point, I'm back like 0.8 points. There's still, I don't know, 10 minutes left in the game. And Aaron Jones now has 146 yards. And so if he gets 4 more yards, I get an additional 5 points. The Vikings go like 3 and out because they were terrible that game. And sure enough, the next play, Aaron Jones gets 6 yards. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I need Devonta Adams to do nothing. I need Mike Boone to do nothing. I need Amir Abdullah to do nothing. And it just like, they pretty much, I think they go 5 plays or 6 plays and then they punt, and the Vikings do. And then the Packers get the ball and they kneel. And I was like, oh my God, I just won Scott Fish. This is the craziest thing. Totally thought I was down and out. And here I am with Aaron Jones getting me exactly 47 points.
That's incredible. I saw the video that your wife posted of you. Like, I think it must have been, what, like a couple of minutes after you'd won it? Or it was like in the moment? I mean, talk us through that.
Oh, yeah, dude. I am just like losing my mind. Especially the... I don't know, just everything that I had said, just a series of events that had led up to all of a sudden this happening, and the genuine disbelief that this had actually occurred. And my wife started recording. The funny thing is, even you saying that you saw my wife's video. So I also posted a video after the fact, and my wife's video somehow got more views than mine did, which I just thought was like hilarious because my wife's barely on Twitter, but it was just the first video that got up there. Honestly, dude, I mean, it's, I want to say it's like the coolest thing that's ever happened in my life. I'm obligated to say getting married and having my son beats it. But like, in terms of like personal things that have occurred to me, it's probably the coolest thing that's ever happened. I don't expect my life to drastically be changing or anything, but I've always phrased it as, we talked about what if people wanted to get into the industry. I have always assumed there is 0% chance I will ever become a fantasy analyst by trade, right? Until I once got fish, I still believe it's a 0% chance, but it's the first time I was like, it could happen. It won't, but it could. Prior to this, there was no chance of it happening. You just, too many lucky breaks have to occur. But ultimately, like, this is a lucky break. This is the one thing that could make someone be like, oh, what about this guy? This guy did this. And now kind of you get to, for lack of a better term, live in infamy as one of the 10 winners of this giant tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're now on a podcast in the UK, which, okay, we're not gangbusters, but still, you know, you're now international. We're going to make you global. But I had to take a moment. One of the sad aspects of this was, you mentioned Tommy Garrett, and he posted a pretty innocuous post, and it was almost, I think it was like a shock face or something like that. I can't quite remember what the tweet was. And everyone thought that he'd won the Scott Fish Bowl. So everybody started tweeting Tommy, like, congratulations on winning the Scott Fish Bowl. Everyone thought that he'd won, and he had to repeat about 20 or 30 times, I didn't win, Gary won. And to be fair to him, he was fantastic. I dropped him a DM afterwards because I follow him on Twitter. He follows us. And we've had a couple of chats. And I sent him a message like, what a gracious loser, like, bad luck, but you've handled this like a champ. Because I don't know if I, for example, could deal with it that way, knowing that you were basically 3 or 4 yards away from winning the Scott Fish Bowl, and then to have everyone congratulating you like you'd won it, only to then have to tell everyone that you didn't.
Yeah, it was two of his buddies went on and posted the congratulations. It wasn't even Tommy, and it definitely, Tommy felt like it was that case. But yeah, I felt really bad. The crazy thing is, as you said, or as I said earlier, we don't necessarily know each other. But there was this weird thing in the off season. Tommy's like me, like, kind of addicted to mock drafting. And I started doing a lot of mocks, and you kind of just start mocking with a lot of the same people. And Tommy was one of them, to the point that at some point the fantasy in session guys started a random just kind of Twitter league for bragging rights. And Tommy and I are both in it. And so this guy that, like, we don't know who each other are at all of a sudden, we've spent the season kind of talking shop and talking about football, and here we are in the final seconds, final minutes of the regular season, playing for what for both of us is pretty much the largest tournament we've ever been in, and playing against each other for what ended up being, I think, like a 4-point difference. You know, it's just, as you said, it's 4 yards that split two guys that didn't know each other from Adam or Eve, and here we are. So it's awesome, and he's been awesome about it. It'll definitely be fun once the season starts back up, kind of, you know, I'm sure, jawing at each other and everything. But he's been great about it.
He really has, like, hats off to him, because he not once mm-hmm. was bitter about it, or at least publicly. And to get all those messages and then to have to tell people it's not what happened. He hadn't won. I mean, it was a lot, but he handled it like a true champ. And, you know, he's a real, I don't know him, I'm similar to you, sort of connected and chatted a little bit, but not loads. I haven't done a mock draft with him, so something I look forward to doing in the off season. But from what I do know is he's a really, really good guy, and it comes across not just on his Twitter, but just the way he handled that situation. So it was unfortunate, but someone has to win, and that's you. So I guess, you know, we're only a few weeks removed, and you say it's not going to change your life. But what has changed since you won the Scott Fish Bowl 9?
Definitely gained, you know, 500-600 followers on Twitter, which has been cool. I will say one of the craziest things, Andy Holloway, who's fantasy footballers, I had DM'd him just kind of saying thanks, because they're really my go-to guys. I listen to them daily, as most of us do, but I actually, their rankings are kind of not my default rankings, but they're when I'm looking for confirmation bias. I go to theirs. They're the rankings for my own confirmation bias. And he ended up following me, and it was like, this dude follows 322 people, and now he follows me. I'm one of 323, and he has 115,000 followers. Like, that was one of the coolest things, just someone I've looked up to for so many years. Also, I mean, really the biggest thing is the amount of podcasts and exposure. That's the coolest thing. I mean, I tend to do 1 to 2 podcasts, it feels like, a week. And this is the off season when people are doing them slow. I remember last year, just the amount of pods that we saw FF Stompy doing towards the beginning of the season. So I really do look forward to that. And I don't know if it's the right way to say it, but ultimately, like, this is something that we take to be such pride. Like, really, it's my main hobby. You know, I have my family, I have work, and then I have fantasy football. I just love it. And to kind of have the validation that, like, in some respect, yeah, I totally got lucky, and I am very aware of that. But also, like, I got lucky, but it's also validation that I do know what I'm doing. It's cool. The weirdest thing is that my friends in real life, only like one or two of them even know what it is. Even the guys in my main fantasy league, they don't really listen to the same pods, or they're not on the Twitter sphere for fantasy. And so a lot of them, I'm like, do you know what this is? And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, well, I won it, even though you have no idea what it is. Yeah, it's cool. One of the other funny things is texting my family and being like, I kind of told them that I was in this tournament and that there was a chance, this tiny slim chance that I could win it. And they were like, oh, so you win lots of money? No, I kind of just win infamy and recognition. And they're like, okay. And then when I finally won it, they're just like, way to go, Gary. Like, that's cool. But in the same way, it's kind of that validation that, like, if something ever happens with this and you guys are ever like, really, that's what you want to try and do with your career? It's like, no, like, this is something that's happened and that I have shown I might be able to do, whether or not I can or can't. I will say it's very strange. I'm not really one to publicly exclaim about my wins about in anything in life. Like, I'm a little bit more reserved than that, I think. And it is strange talking about even stuff like this, kind of the toot your own horn type thing. Feels a little awkward, but I realize you kind of just have to seize the moment and kind of just jump feet first in and try and go after it and see what happens from it.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of it. You got to celebrate it. It's an incredible thing. As you said, you're the ninth person ever to win this. There's not a big list of people that have won this tournament,
yeah,
considering how many people enter it every year. And every year it gets bigger. The way I try to explain this to, I explained this to my wife, and she didn't really get it. And I used an analogy that she didn't get either. I compare this tournament to the World Series of Poker in the sense of it's a big tournament that everybody enters in the hopes of winning it, only with the exception of winning all the money at the end. But it's because you've got these big celebrity people in the industry. Like, everybody knows who Matthew Berry is. Everyone knows who Adam Rank is. Everybody knows who the fantasy footballers are if they've ever played the fantasy football league. And, you know, they might not know, you know, the Justin Boones or et cetera, but you've got these guys who are seasoned professionals, and then you've got people like us who we write and we have a passion and we're involved and we get entries through what we do. But then you also have just regular fans who just win entries, who aren't affiliated with any kind of fantasy football. They just play and they get an entry through some medium or however. And then you got a few celebrities in there, like James Roday from Psych was in there. So that's how I likened it when I explained it to people. And that analogy kind of tends to work with people. But even so, yeah, you're right. You don't get the money, or you do get a few prizes. What did you actually get for winning?
So I have received, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher people's names. Let me just pull them up so that I don't mess with it. I received $250 in donation to the MVP of my team, which has been pretty crazy, about Michael Gelkin. He's actually a beat writer for the Cowboys. So he set that up with Scott. And so they donated to the Boys and Girls Club of Green Bay for Aaron Jones, being that he won me it. So I went with him as the MVP. Obviously there was McCaffrey or Thomas, but given the actual winning circumstances. And then I will get a trophy, which looks super awesome, coming from trophysmack.com. And that will actually have a fishbowl on it that we will be putting a fish in. My son, I'm sure, will be very excited, and so will my cats. And then I get a trophy belt. I will at some point also be getting $250. That's just all this stuff's donated, right? I'm sure that there will be some other prizes. It's interesting. Some of the other like runner-up prizes are like a lifetime subscription to Football Guys and stuff like that, which I would obviously love to have. I don't actually pay for any subscription sites just because I think there's so much information out there. But as you meet and talk to these bigger fish, you definitely realize like some of them are probably worthwhile paying for their stuff. JJ or Joe Dolan, I think he writes with Football Guys, right? Or he used to.
He was with
he's with Fantasy Free Agents right now.
He's Fantasy Free Agents, and then he's got a new venture he's going to be launching, which he hasn't told anybody about yet.
Well, we won't ruin that then.
He mentioned it on his podcast. Yeah, he hasn't announced what it is, but he's got a new venture that's coming out. He was telling us that he's got a new venture coming out. They just get ready to sign the legals. That actually, Fantasy Free Agents was a stopgap. It wasn't something they were planning to do. They had this new venture, but not all the legals got done in time for the season. So Fantasy Free Agents came about as just we've got to do something for the year. And then they ended up getting a massive amount of downloads. And, you know, he was saying how much it's really validated his own self-worth, because he always felt that he wasn't someone who perhaps deserved the kind of recognition that he's had, because he always feels like he's not as good as as people think he is. And he's still got an element of that, but I think it helped he said it helped his mental health and his ability to really focus and self-worth, etc. So, but yeah, there's quite a few guys who have some great content out there. You've got Establish the Run, you've got, as you mentioned, Football Guys is a subscription that we were luckily gifted this year, and it's fantastic. It's a great resource. So hopefully, I'm sure someone's got to hook you up with that. For winning the Scott Fishbowl, I think you deserve a lifetime subscription to Football Guys.
There's one that the guy just reached out about the other day, and it sounds like such a cool idea. So CPMC Dynasty Forecast Podcast. Let me just pull up their actual thing so I don't butcher this. It is, these guys created kind of a service where you pay and they end up doing a podcast, an hour-long podcast about your dynasty league in the off season. And they look at like power rankings for your league. They look at like weak spots for each team. They look at what maybe do a mock draft for the teams, or they review like if you've already had your rookie draft. And so they do a whole hour for it. And so yeah, it's Fantasy Football Dynasty Forecasters. And so I told you I joined this like 10-year dynasty league that I happened to kind of get in. And actually it's a crazy story, because one of the guys got diagnosed with a potentially terminal disease. And so he just said he didn't have the time to focus on it, even though like it's his favorite league. So I got offered to take over for him. He ended up coming back and being like, you know, I think I do have time. And I was like, I'll give up my spot. Like, it's obviously your team, but I had made a bunch of moves already. And it just happened to be that someone else, unbeknownst to any of this happening, decided to drop out and just kind of ghosted everybody, despite being in this for 10 years. And so this guy who had the terminal disease ended up jumping back on and taking over a different team. And so he's back in the league, and now it's the nine of them plus me. And I was like trying to integrate myself into this league and get them, you know, whatever. And this dude reaches out about this Dynasty Fantasy podcast thing. So we haven't done it yet, but I am so excited specifically for this one gentleman to have this podcast for an hour about what is his favorite fantasy football league. And I just, none of them know about it. And I'm so excited to surprise them.
That's wild. That's awesome. I love that. I think that's a great surprise that you will spring on them. And I think that's an incredible thing. What a great prize to have. And That's cool. You have to send me over the details of that because I'm quite curious. I'd like to listen to some of those as well because I think that'd be quite a cool thing to listen to about other people's leagues. I think you can learn a lot. We've got about a couple of minutes left. So I just wanted to talk to you about and appreciate it's really early, super early 2020 fantasy football strategy. Do you have in your keeper leagues, dynasty leagues, players on your 2019 rosters you're looking to ship out, try and trade away, or do you have any buy low candidates that you'd be looking at as well?
Oh man. For the rookies are so hard for me to place because I really like to evaluate where players are within a specific team. There's just so much. I mean, I feel like the top 15 picks of the rookie draft this year could all be not, you know, top five, top 10 seem like they're going to be potential studs. It just happens to see where they go. I'm really hoping the Niners take a wide receiver one, depending on what they do. Obviously of Debo and Manny Sanders, but you know, I hope that they draft a high value wide receiver to try and take over that spot. So they would be someone I'd wanted to go after. In terms of non-rookies, players that I'm super high on moving forward for dynasty, for keeper, would be like a Devin Singletary. I'm a really big fan of. I just think he has all the tools to really break out in the coming years. There are some free agent moves that I'm curious to see what will happen. Someone like a Chase Edmonds. Obviously, Raheem Mostert just had his really big game, but I'm really excited that I have him on a couple of rosters where he might be a keeper. Obviously, the San Francisco backfield is kind of crazy. Away from running backs, someone like a Mike Gesicki. I'm very curious to see if he's able to finally put it together. Tight ends take a little bit of time to blossom, and he seemed to start really putting it together. And as everybody will always say, he's a spark freak and one of the best athletes in the league and all this stuff. So that'll be curious. Someone that I'm down on would probably be like a James Conner. I'm nervous that James Conner has worked his way out of a starting role, or at least has definitely just placed himself in a full-on committee, because you can tell that you can't really trust him due to injuries. Someone similar to that, I've said this on another pod, but I'll default to it, is Kerryon Johnson. I'm nervous that Kerryon Johnson's never going to get the workload he needs, either under Patricia, or if he does get it, he'll just continue to get injured. I don't know if it's necessarily he's injury prone, but it definitely seems that way. Some people would have said that about Dalvin Cook, and look what he did. I think that Kerryon Johnson is all the talent in the world, but if you can't stay healthy and you keep getting, you know, especially ankle stuff, lower leg stuff, it's kind of just compounds over and over. Yeah, I think off the top of my head right now, those are the players that I'm definitely going for or staying away from moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty wise list. My co-host Stocks is massively high on Kerryon Johnson, so we had quite a lot of teams we co-owned, just due to the fact otherwise we'd have even more teams. It's a bit ridiculous because we do a lot of listener leagues, and Kerryon Johnson was someone we took in quite a few leagues, and I'm with you. The two things that worry me about him is the volume and the health. It's the same reason why I've never drafted Dalvin Cook, but next year I'd consider it, because until he plays 14, 15 games, I don't want to know, because you can't be taking a running back in the first three rounds and that player going down for, you know, subsequent time. And I always hate that, because I think that's just they're the only rounds I tend to go a little bit safe. I don't mind looking for upside, but I need to know they're going to play. And that's my one worry one or two worries with Kerryon. But I'm similar to you in your thinking, in the sense of I think Singletary can break out. The one worry with him is touchdowns. If Josh Allen can learn to not hog them all himself, that would be good. And the other one is I really love Miles Sanders. He was someone I targeted in a lot of rookie drafts last year, especially now with Jordan Howard going to free agency in the hopes that he doesn't sign. I think they don't need to sign Jordan Howard to another deal. You know, they should feel confident that they've got Miles Sanders there. And if, all right, fine, you got Boston Scott, you might take some of the workload, but the fact he's efficient in the passing game, I really like Miles Sanders. He's someone I'm trying to target in a lot of places. But
I really like, if they move on from Howard, to use Sanders and Boston Scott, because they have such potentially overlapping skill sets that you could run, if you ran a two-back set pretty regularly and integrated that, you would have no idea what type of play that they're going to be running, because you could go through, up the middle, you could go out to the flats, you could send one of them out in motion. I mean, there are just so many things that you could do. And I think Howard is just so much more one-dimensional that when you have a play caller like Doug Peterson, that could be so creative, and it could potentially keep both of them a little bit healthier. I really like both of them in that backfield, and just with Carson, who, if we're going to talk quarterbacks, right, Carson always needs to be discussed as a possible top five finisher, given what he's done and just how wrecked they were with injuries all season.
Yeah, he's another one for me. It's health with him, and appreciate a lot of people jumped on him in the playoffs, which was ridiculous because it was a hard hit. That's a game hit that doesn't prescribe to his injury record. You know, if someone hits you helmet to helmet and you get knocked out of the game, that's got nothing to do with what's happened previously. But he's another one. But given the fact I can't see him going before the 9th, 10th round, he's someone that is fairly interesting in drafts, provided that they get some weapons there. Because if it's just going to be Deshaun and Nelson Aguilar, if Alshon's still going to be there, it's interesting to see. They need to get some weapons there. I'm really disappointed they didn't use J.J. Arcega-Whiteside more, given the draft capital they put into him, because I like him as a prospect. I think he's someone that could. He gets good separation. He's got good catch radius. It's just you got to use him and put him out there. But we will see coming into the season. But this has been a lot of fun, Gary, and I'd love to have you back before the season starts just to go through a bit more your thinking and process. Maybe before the Scott Fishbowl starts, Scott Fishbowl 10, we can have you on and talk about your strategy and process for what you're thinking, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to. It's always nice talking to someone from the UK. We didn't actually address it. I kind of forgot at the intro. I'm actually from the UK. I am kind of the bastard Englishman. My entire family is from Scotland, but I was born in Hemel Hempstead been in the US for about 30 years now. But my entire family is pretty much born in either South Glasgow or my family lives in Dundee, outside of, you know, they're kind of all coalesced there. Other than my parents, my brother, my sister, and I, and now we've been in the States for about 30 years. So it's really fun. Definitely talking with you and this whole going international thing. So I'm always down to chat.
Amazing. Well, that's great. And I know Hemel Hempstead well. I grew up in just outside Potter's Bar. So I know North London quite well. And I know it's more Hertfordshire, but it's a cool place to grow up. So that's amazing. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find your work, where you are on Twitter, where they can potentially ask you questions and reach out and talk to you.
So I'm at fightingchancefantasy.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Gary Haddo 1. That's the number one. So it's GARYHADDOW, the number one. And, you know, other good follow would be at Fighting Chance. That's Ryan Hallam. He's the gentleman that started Fighting Chance Fantasy. And there's a few of us also that right there in the season. I mean, in the off season, I'll probably just be doing some general player stuff. I kind of like to do higher level things in the off season and then slowly get into more concrete player stuff as the off season progresses. And then in the season, I do like a weekly waiver column, which I always think are pretty generic things, but they're fun to do. And then there's a roundtable discussion that we do weekly and a parlay thing that we do, just looking at picking against spreads. All pretty much fun stuff. We're just a bunch of people that are just guys and gals that are having good time just writing about fantasy, doing what we like to do. So come check us out. And to be honest, I'm hoping after the Super Bowl to probably start a podcast with one of the guys, Kevin Tompkins, and kind of see where we go from there. So yeah, just kind of take this wild ride as we move forward.
Well, when you do start your podcast, make sure you drop me a link. I'd love to listen and check it out. And love to support it as well and send over some, you know, give it some shares and some follows and get it up and running, because anyone that wins the Scott Fish Bowl has got my attention automatically.
We will definitely be having you on, to be honest. So, I should just say my wife is texting me pictures. My belt arrived, my wrestling belt. I don't know if I referenced that as a one of the prizes. Yeah, so that just arrived in the mail today. So it'll be interesting. I just DM'd you pictures of it so you can see, and I'll post some on Twitter as soon as I get a chance here. But it's quite exciting. What a perfect way to finish off this podcast without arriving.
That is awesome. That is a really cool belt. Yeah, I'll retweet it when you repost, when you post it out. I'll retweet it, and so our listeners can follow it. But that's quite incredible. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to talking again. We'll definitely stay in touch in the off season. Any mocks, invite me, or I invite you. We'll do quite a lot of stuff, I'm sure. But yeah, it's just been a real pleasure talking to you and hearing your story. It's really cool. But until next time, and until next week, Rush Nation, where it's Super Bowl week, keep rushing.
HIV is still an issue in Montgomery County. The more open we're able to talk about HIV, we treat it like any other health prevention.
PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. People who are not HIV positive, who may be at high risk for contracting the disease, this is a good choice for you.
It's just a way for you to sort of take control and say, I'm going to do this to protect myself. Do it for them. Do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about PrEP, the HIV prevention medication. Visit doitforyoumc.org.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.